Accession number 18490, Reel 6.
Three and six.
So after quite a pantomime, they didn't want to know anything about it. They was treating it like a joke, but I had to emphasise on them, and I, in no uncertain terms, molto pronto, I needed a guide. And eventually they supplied me with a guide. He took me to a house nearby, and this... They two young partisans with a gun, they had a gun each, they pointed at this old deer. She went and got her husband, and he said he had no boots. So they went next door and took the boots off of the chap next door, give him these boots, and they ushered him at the point of gun to show me the way to this, through the mountain passes, which was all forest. But he was hopeless. He crawled along very slowly. He was too old for it, really. And I was getting so frustrated that I thought, eventually we come on a plateau, a big dog come out barking at us. And these partisans tried to make this other chap guard us, this other peasant, to continue the journey and leave this old peasant there. But I was so annoyed and frustrated at this slow movement we were making. I said to this other marine, I said, come on, we'll take a chance. And so we made our way up as hard, right to the top of this mountain, and looked down. I could see a lake at the bottom, and as it happened, by a stroke of luck, we made our way right down to the lake, shore of the lake, and we hit on this, by a sheer stroke of luck, we hit on this place where the LRDG chap was, who had the radio in contact with base. And I'll give him this note. They was just making tea. One was having a shave. Two of them there was. And I said, get this off as quick as you can. He said, we're on the air in a couple of minutes. Give me a cup of tea. And he got the message off. And I made it, started making my way back then immediately. And that meant I'd been going all through the night. And I went through all that day climbing. And during the day, when I was up so high, I could see these rocket fire and typhoons, which I'd was on the message. I could see them diving down, loose, and they were doing up this mountain div that was coming through, which was mainly horse transport. They didn't have much motor transport. And when I eventually got back, that it was night time before I got back to where I'd left, the place had been overrun. I didn't know that, but when I found this old shack which I'd left from, it was just a string of onions in the middle of the floor. Returned to the last billet, which was quite a few miles back. So off we went again. And we passed peasants on the way who'd been with their bits and pieces of sheep and goats. The old place had been overrun with jerrys, but we didn't know that. And we eventually found our old place where we'd left from. And they were surprised to see us. They thought we'd had it. They said, oh, here's Smithy and Williamson, that only leaves May and Horsfield. So when I explained to him that I'd got the message off, and in come, after a short while, they came in apart. They'd been a mile or two apart, these two. They'd been creeping along the ditches. And eventually in comes a sergeant with a black eye. And I said, "How do you get that?" And he said, "It was your bloody sniping rifle." He took my sniping rifle. And I said, "Where is it?" He said, "I left it under the bushes." So we went back next morning and couldn't find it. I think that was the end of Albania for us. I can't quite remember. We went back to Italy from there. Got back to Italy, sent straight over to Yugoslavia. There again we landed by boat up in Zara. And Zara, two Italian deserters, sort of my memory, deserted to the local partisans. So they said if you sent a naval ML rain there, they would surrender. So they sends a naval ML rain there, but they bumped into an E-boat and they got shot up. Oh, there was naval casualties. And they, when they got back in Zara, they were tied up more or less alongside our barge. We was on a landing craft. And when their officers spoke to our officers and my officer about it, he says, "Right, I'll send my patrol rain, do them up." So he came and back aboard. Meanwhile, my patrol officer, Captain Lees and Bill Mayo, he was a corporal, had gone off to reconnoitre a German airfield nearby. And so on the spur of the moment, I was given a new officer. And this was his first experience raid. And Sergeant Horsfield, meanwhile, had got RTU'd. And we had another sergeant, Jock Cameron. And
why was the RTU?
It's a matter of opinion. It was because he left my sniping rifle behind in Albania, or he lacked that extra something. And but that's a long story, what happened after that. But anyhow, off we went to this island with this new officer. And we took one of these Italian deserters with us as a guide. And going along the jetty, we were behind this officer and the briefing officer, a few paces behind. And then I heard this briefing officer say, "Killed the effing lot of them." And this interpreter, this chap with me, this Italian guard, he heard this and he must have understood English, because he right away ran out, "Oh, niente, do this, do that." And he was flung aside. And in that instant, I realised we was in for not very successful recce or raid. So we got on this MTB and off we went. And we landed on the back of the island at dark.
Which island is this?
Lucin Piccolo, I think it was. But Lucinge, I think it is on the map. We landed, we climbed in the dark, and we got to the top. We started weaving our way up this mountain path, and this Italian guide, he was trying to tell us he'd lost his way. He didn't know. It was obvious he didn't want to show us where his billet was, because he knew we was going to kill a lot of them. So he every time we asked him which way, he said he didn't know, he wasn't sure, and if anything, he was trying to direct us away from it. But something told me that he was leading us up a dog's path. So I remember having several arguments with the officer and the sergeant about this, because I felt he should realise this, that he was being, but this officer being his first ride, he was tend to take too much notice of him. But it was obvious to me that he wasn't going to show it. And come about 3 a.m, after we'd been going this way and that way, and it was first signs of dawn, he turned round to me in frustration and he said, "Well, Corporal Smith, what would you do if..." because that was the essence of our unit. We all sort of put it to each other, any ideas we had. So I said, "Well, you spoke the best Italian. You go down with him to the house." I said, "Get him to parley with a chap on the sentry." Because we, to my way of thinking, we weren't very far from this house. I said, but with that, it's Jockle's sergeant. He said, "No," he said, "time's getting on." He said, "Only wants something to go wrong." And we've had it. So they decided, the officer said, "We'll come back the next night." So we made our... We were carrying with us a load of petrol, a can of petrol. And we made our way through the town and tied up. I think we tied up. Yes, on this particular night, the ML come into the little harbour and tied up. And we made our way through the village, and there was a lot of broken glass, dogs barking and everything. And we got aboard and went all shot off back to the coast of Yugoslavia and camouflaged up, and with the intention of landing that night. Next night. But the next night we went out and it was too rough. We couldn't get ashore. Couldn't get nowhere near it. So we went back, camouflaged up again. And meanwhile we got a message from base saying, "What are you up to?" And we were called back to Zara. And when I got back to Zara, old Captain Lees was back there after his reconnaissance, and I said to him, I told him the problems we'd had and what I thought of this new officer. And I asked him to come, something I regret. But I think he would have come anyway, because he got killed when we got back. Anyway, we went back. We landed on the back of the island this time. But in the meantime, what we didn't know was the Jerry's had took the eye ties out and filled it with Jerry's. They're crack troops, so I'm told. And yeah, we landed on the back of the island. We climbed down the mountain and we were about 50 to 60 yards from this house. We looked around this corner. I think it was a little small chapel on the right of us, and a brick wall. As we looked round, we made effort to approach the house. There was bullets flying everywhere from this house. So we crossed the road, we dived over the road. There was a low wall on the edge, and the officer, he laid there. I got right behind him, and he said, "You there, Smithy?" I said, "Yeah, I'm here." And they were firing at us, and we crawled up to the approach to this house where their fire was obscured by trees and bushes. And it was there he had to go into the house, and I had to cross over and go on up and meet the sergeant who was beyond or on the other side of the road. Or we had to go past his house and guard it against Jerry's that was further up the road, or some troops. We didn't know there were Jerry's, but we knew there was troops further up the road. And so I managed to go past the front of the house, and he disappeared in with the chaps who was behind me. And it was there, as they approached the house, I think he got hit with a stick grenade, or I'm not sure if he got into the house. But no, we couldn't have done, because anyhow, I remember getting under the trees just on the side of the road with the sergeant, and it was then I felt my hand sticky and a slight throbbing. I'd got a bullet in the arm apparently, but didn't feel it. And then I said to him, and I said, "Here, I think I'll cop to my hand with my arm was all sticky with the blood that was running down it." And anyhow, our job, we kept a lookout on this road waiting for these reinforcements. Meanwhile, the battle was going on in this house. There was flares going out the chimney. There was small arms fire and explosions and cries and screams. And eventually the whistle blew, which was a signal to evacuate. So when we got back to the front of this house, everyone had gone except the major. And he says, "That's Captain Lee's in the doorway. He's at it. Go and get that prisoner. There's a prisoner down there to the right." And we could see from the flames that he coming out the window, there was a small wall, a drop of about 3 or 4 foot, and laid in the gardens was this Jerry. It was then I said to this sergeant, I said, "Christ," I said, "here's a Jerry here," where we was expecting to find Italians. He had a stick grenade. I took the stick grenade out of his hand, and we dragged him up, lifted him up this wall, and I held his, somehow, I remember, I'm not sure, quite sure, but I was dragging him along on his left side, and Jock at his right side, and we were dragging him away. We had to bring a prisoner. And I'm trying to look behind to see if there's anyone following us after all that mayhem. And it was then I heard this crack in my ear. And somehow, to this day, I don't know how, he got a small Beretta, which I later found. He took this Beretta and must have put it in his mouth or somewhere and fired. And as I turned around to see what this crack was, old Jock had let him go. He said, "Let him go." So I let him go, and when I heard him go, I heard this metal object hit the deck. So I thought, I'm going to have the gun, if nothing else. I remember looking for this gun. I turned him over, I think it was 3 times. And I eventually see in the moonlight and this little glistening object, it was a new little Beretta. And with this, when this officer from, senior officer, I forget his name, he came back to see what the commotion was. And as it happened, old Geary, Sergeant Geary, he happens to drop his Smizer, which are their semi-automatic, and each time it hit the deck, that went off. There was a few rounds flying off. And this officer come up, he said, "What's happened here?" The words to that effect. I said, "He shot himself." So he made sure of it. He put 3 rounds through his head with a Colt 45. And he told me to take a stretcher, to give a hand on this stretcher. So I went over and I took over, which wasn't a stretcher, I found out later. It was a door that had been blown off. And my old friend, Bill Mayo, he'd had quite a few bullets up the leg. He was badly wounded. And they'd put him on this door. I didn't know. I thought it was a German. And I was on the back of this door, and as we were climbing this mountainside, on the other side of the stretcher at the back was a big guardsman, about 6 inches bigger than me. And I said, "I don't know what we're fetching this bastard back for," thinking it was a German. He said, "It's your mate." We were football buddies, and everyone knew us as football partners. We played for the Penelope together. And He said, I said, Bill, that's you, Bill. And all I could get out of him was, leave me here. So I left him. So with that, I'd lost a fair bit of blood. And the officer could see I had problems at the back, struggling. Now, he told me to go on up ahead where a chap was, another chap had a prisoner. He said, take over the prisoner and send the chap back to give a hand on this stretcher. So I went back to the... So I made my way up to the head. I eventually caught up with this chap taking his prisoner. And I remember it for one thing. It gave me a chance to use the little bit of German I'd been taught. I remember him was he was talking and saying some babbling away, but I said, Murrelhuyten, which is supposed to mean shut up. And as we made our way up, I was going links, left turn or right turn, to make our way back down into the next valley to get back into the where our this ML was waiting for us. When we eventually got down to the shore, it was just on dawn, and I couldn't see us getting away from this place. So the Matlows, we laid this Jerry A on the... we paddled eight to the ML. They dragged him up the side of this ML, and then they helped me up, and he was laid out on the... And all the way along, he was saying something, wir haben scheißen. Or he wanted the toilet, or from what I could gather, and he'd messed himself to come to, and he'd badly wounded in the arse. And time they dragged me up, he was laid out, they was pulling his trousers down to treat him, and he was, he was in hell of a mess. They directed me to a narrow hatchway, which led down to the mess deck, and I must have collapsed there with loss of blood. And the next door I know is I come to on a cruiser in Yugoslavia. I remember opening my eyes, and as I looked up, I could see all these Matlows. I must have been on a British cruiser that happened to be in there at the come in. And there was these Matlows, with a glass of milk and a bar of chocolate, and lying alongside me was this German. And from there, we were flown back to Italy. And we were flown back, and I was taken to a hospital. I was laid on a stretcher in the corridor because the wards were full up with the very serious cases. By coincidence, the day before I went on that raid, my mate in the patrol had news that his mother was dying. I had to break it to him, and the officer says, well, we'll fly you back home. So he got as far as Italy, and then when he got to Italy, he found his mother had died, and he was given the choice to go home. They would fly him home, but he said, no, I'll go back with the patrol. And he was told that, lucky for him, our patrol had gone on the raid, and we took some casualties. Amongst them was the officer killed, and Tommy Kitchenman was killed. And old Smithy, that's me, was wounded. And so we come up to the hospital with a doctor, our base officer, took him up to this hospital. They see me, we had a yarn, and he told me, you want to get out of here quick. He said, we're going on rest camp. They're pulling us out of Yugoslavia, going to a rest camp.
But you still had the bullet in your arm.
Yeah. Oh, the doctor had said, we can't do nothing. He asked me how I was when he come round. He said, how are you? And I felt okay. I'd had a good sleep. That's all I really wanted, good sleep. There was nothing wrong with my shoulder, not then. Later I got trouble with it, but... he said, doctor asked me how I was. He said, I said, I'm fine, I'm feeling good. He said, good. He said, we can't do nothing for you. Get the bullet took out when you get back to England. He said, and report back to your unit. So, after my mate telling me that we was going to a rest camp, I got back there. I went straight back, and my base officer was surprised to see me because he'd helped unload me off the plane the night before. And so me thinking that they're going to a rest camp, he said, where's your gear? I said, in Yugoslavia. That's my gun and the usual stuff I carry to beat with me. He said, well, I'll take my old Batman, get out to Monte San Angelo, that was our base. And he says, you're off up with the 8th Army in the morning. And so I thought, there's some rest camp. And when I got back up to base, they all knew they were going back in the lawn. They were all drunk. And I had to knock up a quick kit. And the next morning, I helped to load them. I had to load them. It was like loading up sacks of spuds because loads of them were so full up with drunk. I stacked them on top of each other. And we spent all that next day going up the east coast of Italy, right up to Rimini Ravenna, up to the south of Camascio, where the front line was at the time. And from there, we used to go out each night in our canoes. The sequence, I forgot the sequence of them, but on one occasion, we had to form a channel for the commandos to get round the back of the Germans. Now, on this lake, on the right of the lake, was what was known as the Spit. It was a narrow neck of land that separated the lake from the sea. And it was there the Germans had some machine gun battalions, and they wanted to get behind them, so which meant amphibious landing. So, but this lake being so shallow, it's varied from a few inches to about 2 or 3 feet deep. So we went out each night in our canoes and to find a channel to get to the north of the lake. And we would go out plotting each night, forming a channel. And when it come to the end of the lake, and then we went over the top. When it got dark, we paddled all day, and we laid out. When it got dawn, we laid on these marshes, in amongst the reeds, camouflaged ourselves over and our canoes, and we laid there all round the clock, right till the sun went down, and remember the Mozzies twice that day. First at dawn, the Mozzies would come over and form a, they called almighty noise. Like bombers going over it. It was when you got millions of Mozzies. And lucky enough, we did camouflage, we covered up.